This is the Data Privacy Detective, and today we're going to talk about internet browsers and our privacy. And with us to discuss this really important topic is Jeff Berman. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. We really appreciate it. How are you today?
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, now, Jeff, you're the founder and the CEO of Cocoon, and we're going to talk about that. But your background didn't come out of being a programmer or a techie years ago. You had a very successful career in real estate, and then you turned to Cocoon. It's a very interesting background. But before I get into Cocoon, let me try this out on you. In Roman mythology, Janus was the god of doors and gates and transitions. And so Janus represented sort of the middle ground between life and death, between beginning and end, war and peace. And so he had to have two faces. And I wonder if you'd agree with me, Jeff, that widely used browsers on the internet are really like Janus. They're browsing for us, and they look at the riches of the internet for us. But they're also browsing us, and they're watching and recording what we do on computers and devices. Do I have it basically right?
You do. I mean, that's basically what the browsers, search engines, search is a little different. They really work on keywords, but your browser actually knows where you're going, what you're looking at, and then collects that data.
Right. And, you know, what you pause on, and if you're looking at cars to buy, how long you spend looking at one versus the other, they clock all that into their database in general, correct?
Correct. I mean, they're working on not having what they call cookies. Now, a cookie is something's placed on your computer for a period of time so that they know you went there and the advertiser knows you went there. And Google is changing its policy, but believe me, in the bottom line of privacy, basically the web works on, not on privacy, it works on collecting data and selling it.
Yeah, it's basically an advertising model for monetization. It doesn't charge you to browse, it seems free, right? But it has to make money somehow, and that's how it does it.
Well, we like to say in the industry that if it's free, you're the product.
You're the product, and our data becomes the product that they acquire and then resell. And reputable companies do it for reputable purposes, selling to advertisers and so on.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some of the top ones. Now, Google, as you mentioned, has Chrome. That's its product. And that has almost two-thirds of the worldwide web browser usage, according to what I've seen. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I think it's 1.5 to 2 billion people. Earth, China has its own, but Chrome is by far the biggest.
Okay. And just as you look at Chrome, I realize it's changing and privacy's becoming more important to companies beyond what the law is doing about it. But, what are the privacy concerns if someone just uses Chrome and doesn't change the settings or anything else? What are the privacy issues?
So all the data, all the browsing data that you collect or you search for is so to speak recorded by Chrome or by the other browsers with the exception of a couple. In Google's world, it isn't actually sold. It's actually given to advertisers that will advertise to you. So you see those ads that pop up, and not only is that data though being collected, it's also and in a lot of places, when you go to a website, let's take Shazam on mobile. So Shazam collects all that data, and you're getting the product for free. Actually, what's going on behind the scenes is everything that you listen to, everything that's going on your phone. So all the apps, they can record all the apps. They can record the longitude, latitude, where you're driving, and they sell all that data to companies such as hedge funds and institutions, hospitals. Virtually all types of companies are buying that data. That's what we call big data. And your privacy is not there. Now, they don't necessarily send your name and your address. They hash what they call hash that. But even with hashing, they can match that at least data up with other data they've collected and have a pretty good picture without your name a pretty good picture of who you are.
Right. And let's take Apple's Safari. Similar to Chrome, or is it any real difference from a privacy?
No, there is a real difference in privacy. I don't know exactly the privacy policies of Safari. They're not a particularly a big player in the market, but they are more private. I don't know their total privacy policies. I do know mobile-wise, which is iOS, so they're coming out very shortly and forcing users, or forcing the companies, I should say, to letting the customer know that they're going to sell that data or they're taking that data, and the customer has the right to say no. Now, what the final results of that is, I don't really know. I don't know if that means users are going to say, no thanks, but I want to use your product, and they're forced to using it. It's going to be a little different outcome coming.
We'll find out. I'm sure the California law in part is driving that to be more transparent about how data is being used, and that's understood. And then before I go on to other browsers, what if you browse incognito? It's called different things on different browsers. Does that mean that the browser's not watching what you're doing?
Nope, browser's watching what you're doing. The only thing that's not watching you is whatever is at home. It's not being shown on your browser and your history. That's being wiped away. Never was there. But everything else that you're doing incognito, it's only incognito to that what's on that screen. What was
right.
Recorded.
So if somebody, if you lose your computer and somebody, the thief takes a look at it, they wouldn't see it by clicking on history, is what you're
correct.
Saying. But the browser, whatever you've used, still would have that information. And absolutely. Then there are a host of other browsers. Microsoft has Edge, which is the old Internet Explorer. And then you have Firefox, kind of a nonprofit effort. You have Samsung Internet, Opera, Brave, you know, all these things coming out. And some claim to be much more privacy-centered than Chrome or Safari. And how do they make those claims? What do they do different that makes it more privacy-centered?
So I'm not sure about Firefox. I really haven't studied their current product. But Brave, for instance, what they do is there's two ways of getting to a site. One of it is HTTP, which means it's the everybody can see that. But an HTTPS, who can't see that? Brave can't see where you're going. So it's encrypted to the site. But it's not truly encrypted because my understanding, the packets that are going back and forth between your computer could be seen by your ISP. So it's not foolproof. It's better, and it's better privacy. And the company that you're on, they can't see who you are. And the only way they can advertise to you, they can take a shot of advertising to you, whatever they want. But to really know what you're looking for, Brave has a program that makes you pay in Bitcoin, or makes the company, I should say, pay the customer in Bitcoin for advertising. So for
the
instance,
customer may not know who you are because, in part, the address has been encrypted. So it's more of an anonymous way of.
Very much anonymous, but not foolproof in that the ISPs can't see where you're going. Because the packet, which little thing sending back and forth, that's not encrypted, but it is to the point where the advertiser doesn't know who you are.
Okay. And then we won't talk about it today, but then there's of course Tor, T-O-R, which people can use and in essence aren't using their own, at least they don't believe they are, using their own web address to get there. And it's used by people to get onto the dark web and so on, different set of issues. So let me turn to Cocoon. Now, when did you start Cocoon?
So I started Cocoon 9 years ago.
And what led you to do that? What was going on?
You know, I was so annoyed with people following me on the web, just as we just kind of talked about, no privacy. Didn't really understand what all that meant because I didn't understand what they were doing with the data. Mm-hmm. And it's not horrible what they do with the data. I mean, it's mostly for advertising. But I was disturbed by the whole thing. So I just kind of sat down and said, can we build a better internet? And I partnered up with, he was my co-founder, with a guy named Brian Fox, who's probably one of the leading technologists in Santa Barbara. And we built Cocoon, which was a private and secure browser, meaning that that when you come from your computer to our servers, it's encrypted. So ISPs can't see what you're looking at. We can't see what you're looking at. Frankly, no one can see what you're looking at. Your ISP is hidden. And we put out a pretty fancy proxy IP address being ours and not yours.
Okay, so that's more of an anonymous browsing rather than call it private browsing.
Right.
Big difference though, isn't it?
Oh, private browsing, you know, there's a lot of limits to private browsing. I would say Cocoon as a secure browser is probably one of the more sophisticated ones. Now, I warn people, I don't want you going to jump over there. We've hidden Cocoon for the moment as we've been working on this new facet, and we've pivoted over to paying people for their data. So,
well, let's talk about that in a minute, because that's fascinating. Sure. Your pivot that's going on. But let me just our listeners are clear: is Cocoon an add-on for other browsers, or is it its own browser? Which is it?
No, it's the best way of describing it, it's built off of Firefox, but it's its own browser. So it's what I would call a very fancy extension. But you would not recognize it. Like, you don't go to Firefox and then download Cocoon.
You go directly to Cocoon. Okay.
And you download Cocoon as its own browser. It's built off of the Firefox platform.
And that's an open source platform, am I right?
Correct.
So it's using open source, where people understand what that is, but it then creates its own browser.
Right. So the theory of open source was, when it really got started, we were to the point where things were given back by developers, and that became an open source where anybody could use that. You could add things for your specialty if you wanted, and your obligation was to give something back in open source.
Yeah, okay. And just before we get into the monetization question, quite a fascinating one. Does it protect the user from virus and malware to any extent?
Ours does. We run an antivirus solution. So before you hit that virus, it would protect you.
So that's part of what you're getting if you do this without buying your own virus or malware protection.
Right.
Okay. But now you mentioned the pivot. So what happened in that? Of course, businesses have to make money somehow. Even nonprofit businesses have to make money. So tell us about the pivot.
So the pivot, you know, we honestly struggled with Cocoon because we couldn't. It's such a great product, but we couldn't figure out how to advertise. I think Brave made a help solve that problem by no ads. And we were looking for a way that advertisers could give you ads. But in the end, the advertisers were like, no, your system's too good. We don't know anything about these people and we can't serve them ads. So we had a monetary issue. I love the idea of Cocoon giving you this privacy and security. However, I also realized that, well, a lot of people, they don't really care. I mean, it's more prevalent in the United States and Europe, but a lot of people don't care about their privacy. They have none. They don't expect to get privacy. If you asked them on the street, they would tell you, I don't care. I have friends that tell me they don't care about their privacy on the web.
And there are others who say privacy's gone anyway, so get over it.
yeah, it pretty much has. I mean, well, with all the people on Chrome and there's no real privacy there. They're kind of right. I mean, there is very little privacy out there, and you got to work to find the browser that will give you that privacy. So not an easy deal. So I decided, well, maybe we should flip this around on the big boys, and maybe we can build a browser and an app that will pay you for your data. So at least you don't feel like I'm just giving it away. Somebody is just taking it and I'm just the product. At least now I can turn around and take your data, providing, you know, you're truthful, meaning that there are people who try and fake this and have set up bots and all types of things to try and get paid for data they're really not searching for.
So it's really using kind of a revenue sharing approach with some of the revenue coming back to the actual person whose data is being shared for advertising or whatever other purpose.
Sure. Our goal is a 70 to 80% to the user and a much smaller percentage to us. Now, everybody's got to recognize that if we can't build a business out of this, then this whole idea of paying people for their data, even as small as it is today, will not survive, and it will be killed off by the Googles and the big boys. And I can tell you, Google wasn't happy when I launched it. Within an hour, they had shut me down from advertising. So that meant there were a number of platforms that I couldn't use to advertise, figuring they would stifle me. It hasn't really stifled me. I found other ways around that, but they don't like what we're doing. That's for sure.
Well, and we'll see how the federal government and states certainly are more and more into the act about making people aware that the data has value. And rather than just giving it away, maybe a user should expect to get something back in return. So good, best wishes on that aspect. Let me talk a little bit about some of the privacy elements that you haven't mentioned so far. Mail slots. What are mail slots in your business?
Well, mail slots was an idea that we had, which we no longer use. And I had to shake my memory here for a minute. That was the idea that if you went shopping, somebody could send something back to you, and it would not get to your regular inbox. It would go to Cocoon's inbox, which was once again IP protected.
A little like what password managers do.
Temporary
email addresses, that sort of thing. But that thing, you've surpassed that now with the way you've already described.
Yeah, I mean, we decided that actually didn't work very well, so we ended mail slots. And now if you do have the Cocoon secure browser, you'll get the privacy and security. And we will plan on bringing it back. We have it in hiatus right now. We're looking for a way to monetize that as well.
Right.
And I think in this case, it would not be a share because that would give away somebody's ID. And I don't want to do that. So the Cocoon Secure would be, we might be making money off of your keywords, but never your identity.
Actually, without identity. So it's anonymized data that is of real value to society.
But it's keyword. Yeah.
Keyword rather than by your personal identity. Yeah. You know?
Correct.
And then by your very name, what happens is what you're doing in browsing is within the Cocoon.
So correct.
The protection you've created. And then where's the data? I think it's, as I understand, it's all stored in your cloud, Cocoon's cloud.
Yeah. So we built it, and this is why I would say we're superior to most browsing things. Most browsers will show your history, cookies, everything on your computer. And what we did was we built a cloud so that this data would not be ever on your computer, but would be stored in your own separate cloud. And so when you go to erase it, it's basically gone. There is no recovery of it. So you could set your settings to, I don't want to keep any history, and there is none. As for us protecting you, it's possible somebody could hack in. That's always possible. Never ever say
hacking is possible with anybody.
Don't ever say that it's hack proof. It's just probably not true.
Yeah.
But it's secure, and the only way that someone would know what you're looking at is through brute force of your password. So if you set an easy password, well, then somebody could figure it out. If you served a heavy password, we just can't see what you're doing. We can see all the sites that people are going to, but we don't know how to connect the dots without you logging in. Then it's possible that somebody could, wiretap somebody if they had a warrant. We would not allow anybody to do that.
Well, a lot of this is up to each of us, isn't it? If we want to protect our own privacy.
Yeah, it's a great.
Don't use 1234 as your password.
Yeah, I'll tell my wife not to do that again.
Yeah, tell her not to write it down on the refrigerator. Yeah. We're guessing.
Yeah, exactly.
Good idea. And then just one last point, and we'll get towards the end here. What happens to a search history if somebody signs up to get some funds back from the revenue? But then the user decides to close out of Cocoon for whatever reason, try something new, or just go completely off the web, whatever. How do you manage that?
So we have a policy: 6 months. If you're not using the product, then we erase you. We erase all your data. If you decide you don't want to use this anymore, you can eliminate all your history. This is for secure, Cocoon Secure. You can eliminate all your history and there's nothing left on our servers. And if you're using Cocoon MDR, our policy is that we would stop recording whatever you're doing. If you ask us to erase everything or send everything back to you, we would do that under the CCP rules and the European rules. So we guard your, we're still into privacy. We just think, hey, you should have the right to sell it if, you know, instead of somebody else selling data, but we're still big fans of privacy.
Yeah, and MDR, as you mentioned, stands for what?
My Data Rewards.
That's the monetization. Sharing the revenue part of it.
Right, so we only have it for Android at this point. We don't have it for iOS yet. It's doing really well, and it seems to be getting pretty popular. And yeah, the thing is, it's going to take time for us to grow it and to sell. The plan is to sell that data over and over again so that you make most of the money. Once again, we're only taking a small portion of this, and the user can make money. So for instance, a truck driver, just to give you an example, they do a lot of driving, and that location information is recorded, and a truck driver could possibly make anywhere from $15 to $30 a month just from driving their truck, doing absolutely nothing but just driving the truck and leaving our app on.
And there certainly are companies who want geolocation data. They don't really know if Ralph or Sally's driving the truck. So there are legitimate reasons to pay something for that data. Information. Right, exactly.
Because they can tell, if they get geolocation, they can see, hey, I went to Walmart, 12 times, or I went somewhere else. And that's important to a lot of data collectors to say, oh, well, this person likes those kinds of stores.
And I would think when we're recording this in the middle of, maybe towards the end, we hope, of the pandemic that's been raging. And it's important to collect medical data it's very sensitive information. People don't want to share it. But if people were confident that they were sharing it in a way that didn't expose them to individual scrutiny, they'd be more likely to do it. And in a way, that's what you're doing with browsing, if I understand.
Yeah, right. But we don't, just to be clear to your audience, we don't collect or monetize any financial, medical, or personal information. So that would be like your name, your home address. And we don't collect any of that. We don't collect any medical or physical, financial information, hate speech, gun sites. We just don't collect any of that data.
Very good. Well, it's clear what you're doing, and it's just refreshing to see somebody who came out of a very different business background that started by saying, wait a minute, when I browse, I'm being looked at too. And maybe I can create a little better way of doing this. So, Jeff, it's been a great pleasure to talk with you. Any last words to our listeners?
Well, if you get a chance, there's two things going on. One, if you have an Android, give Cocoon MDR a shot. And the other is we're going to have a crowdfunding. If you're interested in investing in our company, we're going to have a crowdfunding event in probably 30 to 40 days. So stay tuned for that. We'll let you know.
Okay. Well, Data Privacy Detective doesn't endorse any product. It certainly isn't promoting anybody's crowdfunding, but crowdfunding is another way that people can do what they never were able to do before we had the new technology. And best wishes to you.
I love the crowdfunding. I'll plug it because it gives, once again, what we're trying to do is give the ordinary citizen some cash back for their data. I feel it's the same way about crowdfunding, where it allows a non-accredited investor, and we don't want you to, you know, go take money that you really need to live on and invest it in something, and the government tries to prevent that. But I like the idea that, you know, you can invest early on and maybe you get the big hit on some company that you really thought was a great one.
Well, Jeff, thanks for joining us. And I'll close as I always do. Remember, protecting your personal privacy begins with you.